Good evening. Welcome to the Material Podcast. I'm your host, Florence Ion. This is episode number 459. I have to be quiet on my end, but I am joined by my podcasting partner in crime, Andy Anatko. Hello, Andy.
Hello, and I enjoyed your intro because I'm glad you clarified by saying that you have to be quiet. Of course, you have to be quiet because you have a child, but it sounded almost a little bit spooky. Like, say, good evening and welcome to a most macabre episode of the Material Podcast. I am the headmaster of this little school. You may call me Florence Ion.
Let me tell you what's going on. Let me tell you what's going on with me. Actually, I'm not going to tell you everything that's going on with me because then it would just be trauma dumping on Maine, and we're not going to do that here. But I have been... Unfortunately, I am back to the stage. So I was doing really well with sleeping, which was great because I was reviewing all these smartwatches. I was getting into like a good groove with sleeping. I was getting the sleep that I needed. And then, you know, life happens and you kind of get rocked off. You get rocked off the cadence of life a little bit, and you know, kind of takes a while till you get back right. So
the metronome gets knocked over. You have to write it and then also like reset it so that it's at the right speed again, and then
and you know, sometimes that requires starting back at the beginning of something. And so while I was in a really good just like falling asleep stage for a while, where I was able to like, oh, I'm tired, let me put down the phone and just like stare at the ceiling until my eyes fall asleep, like that's good, that's gonna be a good night's sleep, it's gonna be restful. The hard part is when I can't get to sleep because the brain won't stop, and so I have to, what usually helps me is TV. Can I say I'm an older millennial? And so what I have been watching lately is I've been using this app called Friendly TV. I don't know that I would suggest it, by the way. So I originally paid for it because it's the only way I can get the Lifetime network, because Lifetime is not included in the YouTube TV package. Okay. And it's not included in anything else that I stream, you know, any other streaming service that I pay for. And I really wanted to watch the Gypsy Rose special that came out in January. And I was like, yes. And so I was like, oh, well, it's on, I could watch it through this app. And then I ended up paying for it because I wanted to be able to watch without incessant ads, right? So I'm still paying for it. But I'm trying not to make this a long story, but I'm going to go ahead and just talk about it because I think that this is an annoyance with streaming that we've run into in this day and age, whereas that, especially on the free stuff that we've been relying on, like the free stuff for ads, like Pluto TV, they change their lineup a lot now to kind of keep things going, especially because, you know, rights are changing on their library and all of that and what they can show. And they've taken away a lot of vintage TV content on Pluto TV. So they still have a ton, but they took away my whole Johnny Carson channel. So it was just like all Johnny Carson all the time. And I was falling asleep to that because it's late night TV. It's like,
and that literally... is the traditional historical function of the Tonight Show, where you're definitely up for the monologue. You might be online for like the first little skit they do, like right after the monologue and they come back from break. And then the first guest, particularly if it's, you know, if it's Rickles or Buddy Hackett. But after that, like, you might not be hearing the comic that closes out the show, right?
Yeah. I usually fall asleep around when they do the animal demo. Because Johnny Carson loved to have people with animals on the show. Which, you know what? I appreciate that, right? Because I'm sure it opened some people up to
animals
they would have never otherwise encountered.
It's a delightful thing to book because oftentimes they will do a poopy on the desk or even on the host's head. And that's just solid comedy. That's like,
you'll get an easy bit out of it. Exactly.
Exactly.
The animal will do something to wow the audience. Anyway, so that's why I've been watching this Friendly TV app. Not happy about it. Unfortunately, they only have one season of Johnny Carson. And I found out, by the way, that I found out through TikTok literally 2 days ago that the first 10 years of Johnny Carson don't exist because NBC would just recycle the tapes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a damn shame. It's you can kind of understand like their logic because
these
not like a going down to CVS picking up a 4-pack of VHS tapes. Like these would have been like big honking things that cost a fortune each, and
this
also
was the 60s, late 60s, right? Yeah,
exactly. And like the size of a large pizza, the tape would have been like what, 2-3 inches thick, and also you can't just put it in a storage closet. You have to have a proper storage for it if you're going to store it for any reason. Monty Python famously, like, they rescued their own master tapes because they had an in at the BBC or whatever who let them know that, oh, by the way, the BBC is in this mode of like clearing out storage and like reusing tapes. And so they basically, because they had incorporated themselves, they basically got together and like made an offer. And it wasn't even like, here's a deal to get the rights and the master tapes. It was like, well, if each of these like blank tapes that you want to reuse this for costs $300, we will give you $300 for each, in exchange for each of our master tapes. You can just buy new ones. And that's why like you get these gorgeous, Blu-rays of Monty Python stuff. But yeah, it's terrible. Not only that, but I've heard that something like the majority of films that were produced commercially before like 1930 or something just no longer exist. And that's partly because the old nitrate stock that was like unstable and like actual like explosive, and they tended to like burn up. But also that, again, it's not as though there are a lot of people who are archiving this. There's a great documentary about one of the primary like silent film comedians, and who did really, really well for himself. He didn't squander his money. He like bought an estate and like owned this estate until the day he died. He also like had because he was the biggest movie star at all times, he had like copies of all of his own movies. But even inside his own house, they were just sort of like stacked up in like a wet basement closet. And it wasn't until like the 1950s, the 1960s, when these entertainers were kind of rediscovered, that like there was some college kid, and he's great in the documentary because when in the documentary he's like 20 or 30 years older, so he's definitely a middle-aged guy, but he's still like, I remember I went to his house because I was his neighbor, that I saw like the thing. I was like, okay, please let me for free just like organize this stuff for you and like label them and catalog everything you have and put them on nice shelves. And like he was nice enough to say, well, actually, well, not only let you do that, I'll actually pay you to do that if you'd like to do that. And once again, that's why like all these movies still exist. Yeah, it's a darn shame. It's also the reason why like I'm kind of into piracy. to get into sort of a left turn, because yeah, if you're gonna
have Jim bloop that out, by the way. it's such a naughty word.
Oh, please. Okay. I'm a maverick. I'm unbroken, untamed.
Okay.
But all I'm getting at is that like if you're pirating the Barbie movie, guess what? You're just Johnny no wanna pay. You just don't want to pay for something. Okay, that's readily and commercially available.
It's literally freaking everywhere. Like I can't escape it.
Right. However, sometimes there is like a TV anthology show from the 1950s, or like a B
that I
want to
fall
movie.
Asleep to. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or like a B grade movie that is like is probably as good as any like 3.5-star movie that's been released in the past 10 years, but because it was like early 1950s, it stars nobody, it wasn't based on like any sort of book or character that's famous, it's just one of those books, it was just one of those movies that just sort of came and went, and it's probably owned by someone, but it's probably owned by a company that was bought up by a company that became part of another company when they were bought out and merged into this, so nobody knows who owns it. And on that basis, when it turns up on archive.org, I just don't feel any guilt about like downloading it from there, because I feel like, and if I'm there like talking about it to somebody else, it's a way of making sure this thing doesn't go away. Like I won't make anybody sad by referring to a Pixar movie, but like they did this to us twice. twice where it's like, oh, by the way, if you don't keep the memory of a certain individual, of there are realities in which if you don't keep their memory alive, they simply disappear, like they actually crumble into dust. And so that when the last person no longer knows that this person exists, and then suddenly like their existence is in the afterworld or in the whatever. And so I feel as though by not only having a copy of the Flying Karamazov Brothers version of the Comedy of Errors from the Lillian Beaumont Theater in Lincoln Center, I feel as though I'm keeping the Flying Karamazov Brothers from crumbling into dust, and I do not apologize for that.
Oh goodness, Andy. Well. Thanks for hearing me out on that one. Did you end up going to the Google Store at all? Because didn't that open last week?
Yeah, it opened. It opened on a week ago Friday, and I didn't make it out there. And
it's okay.
And I was thinking, well, you know, I kind of wanted to, because it was kind of, I said last week, there was going to be I felt as though there was a non-zero chance of free quality shortbread cookies with custom icing on it to look like certain Google intellectual property. I was all for that. If not that, maybe even some stickers. I'm all for that as well. I goofed up because I thought if I was just not in the mood to like make a trek into Boston. It's close by, but it's just difficult. It's just difficult enough. And I also made the stupid mistake of thinking, oh, you know what? I might actually, but next weekend might be a good time to go. But I forgot that this weekend is marathon weekend. This is like the Boston Marathon.
It's like the
is
worst
on Monday.
Time to go. It's,
well, it depends. It's either the best or the worst time to go.
It depends on what mood you're in, right?
The Google Store is like one street away from the finish line, the Boston Marathon. It's like this. It's on the parallel street to Boylston Street, like right from the Boston Public Library. So, and all of Copley Square, which is that area in front of the library, it becomes sort of like a, I don't know, like a carnival sort of atmosphere where like you see like all these nervous people who are like walking around, but they're kind of doing like quick steps because they want to keep their calves stretched out. They're looking at the finish line, wondering if they're going to see that finish line on Monday, or if they will see the finish line, but will not be able to remember it because they will just be so wasted from the effort of 26.2 miles and one of the most challenging and rigorous marathon routes in the world. It's a prestige event. So it's not like if you have city marathons in your own cities, as nice as they are, as great as they are, they don't have the same sort of like, I don't know, aura around them as the Boston Marathon, where it's not just, hey, I did my splits, did my training, and so I decided to run the Chicago Marathon. It's like, no, if you're here, it means that this had to be a life goal. You had to qualify for this, or you had to raise a hell of a lot of money for charity. So as a result, the people who are in that environment, it's almost like an Olympic village. So it is a fun place to be. So the way that I would put it is that I would either definitely want to be there or I would definitely not want to be there. There'd be like no middle ground between the two. It would be either, oh my God, it's going to be so much. I'll bring my camera and I'll make sure I have like my battery's charged. Yeah. And it's going to be fun to walk around and see the environment and the energy of the place. Or it's going to be so many people. Like I really just want to duck into the CVS and like get like a beverage. Oh God, I'm in line between these 800 people. Like, yeah, you know what? You don't have to be playing that drum outside. I know you're a busker, but I just see. So I don't. It's hard to predict which mood I'm going to be in. So I might postpone it for another week or so. I just don't know.
You know, let me know if you do go. I'm going to try and go to the city twice this weekend. So
nice.
Which is wild because I have had absolutely no energy for the last 3 weeks to really do much except go on like the occasional nature walk so that I can, you know, soak up some of the sun that we are all having right now. So I guess we'll have to check in with each other. See how we did.
It's good to have a going outside buddy. Not the, like going outside together, but okay. How many times this week did you leave the house?
No, sincerely. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's
again, today I just made.
if you're a freelancer or if you're self-employed, it's not that you become a hermit, but I started something this year that's worked out very nicely. Where at the start of every month, I actually like hand draw a calendar. like digitally on my iPad. Yeah. And so, and it's in my Google Photos. And so every time I go out, like I use the markup tool, I don't, to like put an X on the spot. And I don't know why. And of course there are all kinds of apps specifically for like tracking habits and tracking streaks. I even have like my day one app that I can use just to simply make a note that, oh, by the way, when, but there's something about opening, it's something about like sitting on a bench and just pulling out that picture and making a with my fingertip that I, that seems to, and so it also, it does, it's a non-shame based way to get yourself to do it. But yeah, if I find for myself, if I don't track that sort of stuff, I don't want to be in a position where I can't really have an answer to when was the last time we left the house. And I want to caution, it wouldn't have been more than like 4 days, like maybe on the outside five if I'm super, super busy. Yeah. And I also did my shopping like on the day before that. Okay. So it's not as bad as that, but it's like, I don't like to put myself in a position where it, I think, was it Saturday or Sunday? Because I remember I decided that I wanted to buy a cabbage. And obviously I wasn't going to find one inside the house. So how old is that cabbage? Do I have cabbage left? I would much rather say, okay, nope. Again, you left the house like four times this week. That's fine. You had a streak of 2 days. You're home for 2 days. That's fine. But then you also went out for 2 days. That's fine. You're good. Data.
Well, I'll tell you where I didn't go.
Where?
One of the main topics of our show today, which is Google Cloud Next.
Oh my God, I can't believe you missed that. It's like the Coachella of people who develop like scalable infrastructure on web services.
I mean, to be fair, there were some consumer facing updates from this event. So we'll go through that. There's some exciting stuff coming to your Google One account. Also this week, we're going to talk about how OpenAI pretty much scraped YouTube to train GPT-4. So we're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk about the Android 15 beta. It's finally, the first public beta is officially out. I have not installed it yet, but it is obviously something that is top of mind right now. Also, the Find My Network, actually the, excuse me, Find My Device Network, because Apple's is called the Find My Network and Google's is called the Find My Device Network or the FMD Network. we have some bad news for you about the FMD network. We do have some bad news. So stay tuned for that. And then we'll also talk about a couple other little updates that hit this week. Let's take a quick break. And when we're back, we'll jump into some topics. Well, if it isn't the most interesting trade show that Google puts on every year, Google Cloud Next. Ah, yes. This year's gives us a glimpse into what's next with AI.
Well, thank you. Well, I'm still working on the new news blog. I haven't hooked up the membership stuff yet. That's what's really holding me back. I don't know what kind of payment processor I want to go with. Also, I don't know if you noticed, but I'm wearing my Colorado University cap. And I'm continuing like on my laundry tear. I did not know that you can just like put baseball caps in the water. Like you can, I've always thought that baseball caps are things you wear and then they look really, really gross. And then you stop wearing them because they look really, really gross. I was going to throw this one out. It's one of my favorite caps, but it's like, it was like all sweaty and all gray and stuff like that. But I just kind of like, I just scrubbed it out with some laundry detergent, let it soak for a while, then put it in the wash machine on cold, not even cool, but cold, and then let it air dry. Had it formed, the bill formed. I don't know what else to say. Not much else. I'm sorry. I've let AI jokes like go by for now, like a good year and a half, 2 years. I just decided to jump in on that. I apologize to everybody. I'm going to be quiet. Let's talk about Google Cloud next.
I always enjoy your little bits because it helps me to kind of come out of my shell a little bit, because the thing is, it can be really hard. Hold on, let me adjust myself. Sorry, everyone. It can be a little hard. My leg got trapped while I was trying to adjust. It can be a little hard to make this stuff sound interesting because right now I feel so bombarded by it and so let down by what Google is trying to push right now. And part of that reason is just because of how No, I wasn't planning on saying any of this, by the way. I'm looking at my notes. I had this whole thing written out on how I was going to introduce this, but I just been thinking about it because I've been really, really dissatisfied with the assistant. It just keeps faltering on me. And so let's look at Google Cloud next and see what it is that is really going to, you know, where is Google putting all of its resources?
Yeah.
So it's putting all of its resources into these AI infused capabilities. And the point of Google Cloud Next, from what I have surmised, is that this is the show that convinces us to pay for a Google One account.
Well, kind of. I mean, the point of the show is mostly for enterprises, for customers of Google Cloud. So people who are like running their businesses using Google Cloud for cloud compute. But you're right. I mean, I was really pleased and surprised that I was expecting half of the big announcements were stuff that I was expecting. Again, things that if you are an enterprise cloud customer, this is stuff that is going to be catnip to you. Like here's how we're using like new AI-based app deployment and version tracking for, okay, I have no idea how anybody who is not in control of 800 employees would absolutely have anything to do with this. But it was a little bit of a trail mix of like stuff that is definitely for enterprise people, but also people who are just basic like Google Workspace users.
Yes, which I am. So I'm a very heavy Google Workspace user because my husband and I use it to organize our household. In fact, we have a whole space just for our taxes right now. So everything is getting nicely partitioned into, you know, we're using these things that I'm paying for because I'm paying for the whole family and our Google One account. I'm paying for the Google Photos and Drive storage. I'm paying for all the apps that Mona has access to. Like, I'm full in on this ecosystem. And so when I looked at the announcements that were made, Google Cloud Next, I thought to myself, oh, wow, this is stuff that my $10 a month tier. Yeah, this is the stuff that my $10 a month tier is that this is what's going to be coming to me as just like a regular person who's consuming this. I'm not a regular person, but you know what I mean. So now Google's been working really hard to kind of justify to all of us all of this work that it's done, you know, laying people off, moving things around, shifting focus, getting all these new goals. And I imagine that we're going to get kind of the same thing at Google I.O., or at least at the keynote to Google I.O., kind of reminding us, hey, this is how AI, this is all the stuff we've been working on to bring AI to these existing platforms. So the good news is that some of the stuff that was announced, as I said earlier, sounds compelling. Like, it sounds interesting. Some of the features will begin sprouting up in June. So that's when you can expect these to come up. And as I mentioned, the $10 tier is the one that's going to be seeing some of these.
Yeah, that's the only piece, part of this, all these kind of announcements that's always a little bit confusing about how much of this is for enterprise customers of Google Workspaces and how much is it for people who are just got a Google account and they do stuff in Docs like us. So
the way I'm understanding this pricing structure, because of what happened with my best friend's Google Photos account a couple of weeks ago when I was visiting her, it was maybe, you know, she was paying the minimum $1.99 a month just so that she could have access to a little bit more space for Gmail. And so she would be somebody that this would not be marketed toward. This is definitely marketed towards someone like me who is a power user because I needed something to organize my household, right? And so why not use my existing Google account to do that? Why would I go to some other third party when I have it all integrated here? So I guess I'm going to have to figure out how I'm going to use this new Google Vids feature, which, so basically what it does is it generates a business video based on a prompt that you provide in a Google Doc. And the idea is that it provides you with the equivalent of a hip, cool MTV video that you can present along your presentation to just make things a little more dynamic. That's pretty much what I'm getting from this. Yeah. Would you agree, Andy? Am I on the right?
I had trouble understanding exactly what its strength was too. So it's not generative AI like OpenAI Sora, where you say, okay, I want Captain America walking into our offices and he throws his mighty shield into the copier and spits out like our new business plan, which is, no, it's more like, I just, if you want to communicate something, not with a presentation per se, but an actual video that can be shared, they use the phrase to describe this. It's called Google Vids. It's an AI tool, and they say it's for, quote, telling stories in work environments. And what it generates, as far as I can tell from the demo, is that it generates like presentation / meeting / pitch style videos. Like, here's, like, for example, here's some of the prompts from the demo video. I'm quoting here: a recap video of my weekly marketing meeting. Another one is a pitch video to executives to develop a new solar charger. And you can give it the prompt, but you can also say, oh, by the way, here is a Google Doc that has like all the meeting notes from that marketing meeting, or here is like a spreadsheet or whatever with all the numbers about how we're trying to explain what our goals are going to be. And so we'll use use all of that together. We'll generate a storyboard that you can then edit by simply like dragging things together, saying, okay, I don't want that, make that happen here. It'll also add in music and pictures and video clips, not generated by AI, but drawn from stock libraries based on what AI thinks would go from there. Then this is another thing where I didn't get, there's a voice, I don't know whether it's built in to have a voiceover. There will be a script that you can read from, or you can pick an AI voice to read the script for you. And then the last step is, okay, well, here are like 18 different like visual styles, just pick one, and then boom, it'll spit out a playable video for you. So this is one of those areas where I kind of, if I were writing about this intensively, I don't know about you, but I have been outside of an office workspace for so long that I understand conceptually the idea that I'm going to show you a 45-second video with all the, that will quickly and effectively convey the information I want to convey. I don't know if that's an actual thing. I don't know if that's something that is like such a staple of conference rooms and meetings that Google thinks that's going to be a great idea to automate all of this, or whether they're trying to get people to like, no, okay, you know that really, really embarrassing video that you made, instead of just having like one diagram that said, hey, we're on track, we might be delayed in the second quarter, but we still think we'll be able to ship, but you could have put that in one picture, but you decided to make a wacky like Saturday Night Live takeoff skit video about it, and everybody just decided that, don't know when the next layoffs are happening, but I know who's going to be number one on the list with a star. Yeah, I have no idea what this is for, but we'll find out about it in a few months, I guess.
Andy, I want you to forgive me. I'm going to call you babe. Babe. Let's not forget, we haven't been in corporate America for a long, long time, yeah. You and I.
As my dad used to tell me, I don't think you're even housebroken for an office anymore,
because,
son.
Because the thing is my husband and his job, they totally do stuff like this. And it boggles my mind that this is still happening in corporate America, because I thought that we had hurdled over it. I thought that we had evolved as people. But no, just like the bosses want us all to be in the office to make it look like we're working, they also want us to generate a storyboard, including music, pictures, and video clips drawn from stock libraries.
I'm still a little bit taken aback that like when middle schoolers have been giving reports on the solar system since at least 1923, when the solar system was first discovered. Okay. It's just still like makes me half a step back, realize that, oh, they're giving a PowerPoint presentation like on the solar system. They're not going to just simply, both sides of a sheet of paper, single spaced, maybe single and a half spaced, on the write a report on the solar system. Anybody can like stand in front of the room and say, okay, hop on board the solar shuttle, boom, boom, shiki, put on your seat belts, because we're going on a ride, a mystical ride through and around the stars. Animated GIF of like rocket ship taking off and from Wallace and Gromit.
Makes me want to go to a planetarium. Yeah.
I do understand planetarium technology.
I was just going to say, for you young fellows out there, planetarium, great date idea. I'm just saying, you get to lay down next to each other. Great excuse to hold someone's hand. All right. So coming to Gmail, so this is something that I actually am going to be using. I can definitely see myself using this. The Gmail mobile app's Help Me Write feature is going to get voice prompts so you can send AI-generated emails while you're driving without putting down, well, without taking your hands off the wheel, right, is the idea. Andy wrote putting down coffee and bagels, a joke.
I put that in the dark. That was not the demonstration that Google actually officially released.
Oh, I just realized you're making a joke about somebody not having their hands on the wheel.
But you know that's how it's going to be done. So
maybe in a Tesla. I have to say though, the next feature is something I'll be using, an instant polish feature, which transforms your notes into a polished email. And I definitely feel like this is something I would use if I was just like rushing to get through a bunch of responses, right, like just to reply to say, okay, thanks, or really appreciate it. You know, I would love for Google to be able to help me with that. And it's not because I don't mean it. It's because it's very tired. It's hard. That's a hard thing to do over and over again.
Yeah.
Sheets users, we're getting a new table feature. Now, this isn't HTML tables web 1.0. This is like HTML tables web 3. These are much more dynamic. They look like they were designed to be interacted with, which you want that sort of thing, I guess, in a presentation for Sheets. Yeah. Wait, what are we talking about? Not a presentation.
Well, yeah. Like it's easy, like we all like it's super easy to make a table like inside a spreadsheet, but like yeah. I love watching like YouTube videos of these super users who like, wow, what app are you using to like do this project management? Oh, that's actually a Google spreadsheet, but it's all pop-ups and like progress bars that update automatically and like automatically little dots are turning from green to like yellow as people sign in and sign out. Like, yeah, I do that all with Google spreadsheet. Oh, wow, that's cool. So a lot of that mojo, like making something that interacts with data that looks like it's an app, they look really, really pretty. And I could see myself like as I'm looking at my screen right here, I've got like two or three different like information management apps for two to three different tasks. If I were actually cognizant of what makes a spreadsheet work, other than the sum function, like I could see myself like trying to consolidate all those apps into this one thing, because like now just simply here's a template for, here's a really nice looking interactive table from a template, tarted up a little bit with some adjustments, and boom, Bob's your uncle.
Well, and I have to also say the nice thing about Sheets is like we've started, as I mentioned, we use, you know, Google Workspace for like household stuff, and the charts and things that my husband comes up with for managing the budget, like it's the little things that help make the doldrums of life so much less of a doldrum, you know, including what Andy was describing. Google Docs is also getting a new tabs feature, which is, you know, just going to be a nice way to organize information that you're working on. I'm really going to probably make use of this because I've got a lot of organization to do on my personal Google Docs account. So I think that'll be a good way to get that put together.
I was thinking about this today, and it occurred to me that I'm almost almost like disgruntled at how good Google Docs is, and to the extent to which it has obliterated most other word processors from my requirements, because up until like 5 or 6 or 7 years ago, it was in its lane, it was in its box, it was great for like web-based editing, great for collaboration, but it wasn't the sort of thing that you get your head down and spend an entire like day writing and working in. And maybe partly because of new features and partly because I've just taken the time to like find out what can you do with this beyond simply like beyond like using a prefab style. It's like, I remember when I used to love like Microsoft Word or Apple Pages and all the different design elements of it, and I just don't need any of it anymore. I still have a couple of like purposeful standalone like desktop text editors, but it's not because they don't do editing better than Google Docs does. It's because the way that it organizes the data. And if they keep moving this along the way they do, it's like, I just don't like the idea of, but this product made by a $2 trillion company is so good that I don't have a need to give this small developer $40 a year to use this other app. I've had that happen before, where this app that I've supported for years and years and years just hasn't caught up with the work of 1,000 engineers working at a $2 trillion company, and it's no longer adequate for my needs. And your app isn't wired up to make sure I'm actually using it. Am I? I'll still give you the $40 a year because your app has come in clutch for me so many times when I was writing tech books. I just need the thing where it's like, keep on trucking, dude. Keep it on up. I hope the $40 helps.
I feel that too, Andy. It gets harder and harder. But at the Google's made money off of this. Google is adding Gemini summaries, by the way, to Google Chat. My understanding is that some organizations use Google Chat. My husband and I both use Google Chat. I don't know that I want Gemini to summarize the things that we talk about, though. It seems really, really personal. Another thing that I'm really...
You got me thinking that like chat can be like that kind of like witchy friend of yours that's like, oh, you're gonna tell him about that time when he said he was going to like take care of that dry cleaning for you, but he just quote kept forgetting unquote. But he seems to remember like to make sure he gets him with his friends every Tuesday night. Did you remember that? And I wonder if Chad is gonna have like a mode like that. The doesn't stand for any BS defending your back and getting you in trouble and creating arguments that you really, really didn't need to have.
I mean, it would really prove its efficacy. That's for sure. Finally, somebody takes a woman's side. Here's another feature that I'm going to be using, which is a new Take Notes for Me feature in Meet. It's currently in a preview mode. And so I really like this because sometimes briefings, I'm sorry to those out there who use Google Meet for the briefings, because this might sound like I'm calling you out. But you know, sometimes I don't want to be typing the whole time that we're doing a briefing. Sometimes
you want to be listening. Yeah.
Sometimes I just want to be listening. I don't want to be typing and listening. And then I'll hear something that is really interesting and then I'll try and catch up with my notes, but then I'll miss it. And so, yeah, give me AI to help me with this. So what? This is fine. This is a good use of AI, in my opinion. This helps in aging me multitask a little. No, seriously.
Yeah, no,
a lot easier. No,
absolutely.
My younger brain had an easier time keeping up with the typing and the listening. And now as I get older and I've had a kid, it's like you only have so much brain space for everything. So let AI come and help for that.
I was talking to a friend of mine about this sort of thing, about like taking the fact that we use a lot more reminders and a lot of notes to self like but than we used to. And we were trying to figure out, is this because like our brains can no longer remember things like we could in our 20s, or is it because like we care about repercussions of failing to live up to responsibilities a lot more in our 30s and 40s and 50s than we did maybe in our teens and 20s? And we have more responsibilities too.
The repercussions are worse. Yeah. That's why. The repercussions are a lot worse. Like if I didn't set up my coffee before a podcast. Okay. Okay, couple more things. Let's get through these real quick. So New for Drive is a new AI system that can identify and label confidential files automatically. So that's kind of nice. But you are going to have to train the algorithm a little bit. So Google says it takes about a week. That kind of makes sense based on other like AI-based features I've used, like fitness features. They usually take about a week before it aggregates enough data to kind of understand your use patterns. Okay, I get that. Gemini for Google Cloud. That's the other big thing. So this is a new generation of AI assistants for developers, Google Cloud services, and the associated apps. So basically what it does, it assists the users who are working and coding with this stuff to do so more effectively so they can get better insights, so they can have it be private and secure, all that great marketing mojo that goes into getting developers to use your suite to do their work, right? So Andy put it perfectly in our notes, sprinkling AI glitter over all of the things that enterprise users do with Google Cloud. And you know, that's fine. Glitter is great. Duet AI, by the way, for developers has evolved into a new Gemini code assist. So that'll be helpful.
Yeah.
I assume.
Yeah. It's still an open question whether it will help people who write software for companies do so better, faster, and more efficiently, or whether it means that, oh, great, we can fire a whole bunch of these people because now we've got like three coding assistants in AI because they just simply put in a prompt and then debug it and then making sure it's not going to delete our entire database. Done.
I do foresee that there is going to be a shifting of the jobs, much how our newsrooms have shifted these past couple of years, how the industry has shifted, right? You don't see as many editors, maybe as you used to compared to writers, things of that sort. I imagine that we'll see some parity in the tech world, in the enterprise world, actually. In the enterprise world, I say, because once this stuff gets to offices, clerical work, things like that, I can imagine that some things are going to change. You're going to want to find somebody who knows how to use these tools and be like the fastest with them versus somebody who still like does it the old way, which is going to be rough on the workforce. It is.
Yeah. I try to, as much as
especially an aging workforce, I have to say.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I keep trying to remind myself, like, rather than, I try not to be have a knee jerk reaction. Oh, this is terrible. It's going to be used just to eliminate like people from the workforce. But I do have to remember that, like, when I do walk through that Copley Square that I mentioned earlier, and like, okay, there's John Hancock Insurance Building. There are a whole bunch of other like buildings that like, there are a lot of like big office buildings that from companies that were there since like the teens, 20s, 30s. And like, okay, there used to be an entire floor of that building of just typists. There used to be a steno pool. That floor of the office is no longer for that purpose anymore because you no longer need an entire floor of typists. You no longer need a floor of key punch operators. There are a whole bunch of jobs that it's damn unfortunate that a lot of people had to be either thrown out to look for new jobs or have to retrain for brand new jobs. But AI, as painful as it is, and of course we're both speaking as people who are going to be very much affected by new AIs that can do a certain percentage of our jobs, as well as the people who pay for these jobs or are eager to have that level of quality. Like, not every job is going to be around forever, and not every job is necessary for every part of human history.
I just want to remind everybody that's capitalism, baby. It is. It is at the end of the day. It's like, that's what it is. For the most part, Gemini for Cloud is deemed enterprise ready by those who are really excited for it. Apparently, corporate users and developers can go ham. So enjoy.
Yeah.
You only need to pay $10 a month minimum.
Yeah.
Very quickly, let's go over this OpenAI news. So this is just kind of like a TMZ moment for OpenAI here, okay? It got caught in the act, red-handed, out of the clubs. And that's, I'm going to stop it there because I realize a lot of stuff they perpetuated against women back then, I don't need to perpetuate now. So a New York Times article last week actually told us all about this, which is that OpenAI exhausted all of its sources of good training data in 2021. That was several years ago, folks. So they're not so desperate for new data that they're paying people for use of their content. But the article does claim that OpenAI developed its Whisper AI model for the speech to text in part so that it could start going through YouTube, scraping those videos to get more training data. So supposedly, OpenAI has transcribed over 1 million hours of YouTube videos just to train ChatGPT-4. OpenAI has also discussed ingesting data from audiobooks and podcasts. Okay, but When they commented on this, they responded with a couple of paragraphs that really is just crisis PR management. very, very non-committal, very like not offering anything of substance. But the real giveaway was when OpenAI's chief CTO was interviewed by Joanna Stern. I remember watching this little clip last month in the Wall Street Journal, and Joanna asks her if they had used YouTube to train any of their generative AI, and their CTO responded that she wasn't sure if OpenAI's new generative video tool had been trained with any stuff from YouTube. So then Bloomberg talks to YouTube CEO and asks them about this thing that was printed in New York Times, right? And their CEO didn't confirm the New York Times story, but he did say that if OpenAI did it, then technically they would have violated the terms of service. And that's where kind of like the drama drops.
Yeah.
That's where it kind of ends. So right now we're trying to figure out if OpenAI essentially violated YouTube user terms and conditions in mass.
and the super funny thing is, like, he gave a Bloomberg quote, "Hey, when a creator uploads their hard work to our platform, they have certain expectations. One of those expectations is that the terms of service is going to be abided by. It does not allow for things like transcripts or video bits to be downloaded." And very, very true and very, very appropriate. But there was a tone of, hey, OpenAI can't abuse the content of creators on YouTube. Only we're allowed to abuse the content of creators on YouTube for AI. Because clearly, like, they're not violating their own terms That's of true. Service by, like, scraping YouTube for themselves.
Oh gosh, that's true.
Yeah, there's a kind of a 1-2 punch of really interesting feature articles. A previous one was from the Wall Street Journal that was talking about just this problem of AI. All the easy places to get like training data have already been exhausted, and so it's going to get more and more difficult to find new sources of information. Like kind of like in the early gold rush, where all you had to do was walk along a stream in California and just lift up big chunks of gold, and then like
or
they
so
became
I'm told.
Oh right, exactly. But then like it gets so desperate that, okay, if we literally use bulldozers and excavators to tear down like 8 football fields worth of dirt to a depth of 100 feet and sift through all of that dirt, we will get fine powder gold. And the Wall Street, I think it was the Wall Street Journal that they didn't use that allegory, but they're saying that essentially by 2028, there will just be no more places to just get this mass quantity of good quality training data from. And so whether that means that that's going to be the upper limit of the sophistication of an AI, or whether it just means that, okay, there should be now enough information that whatever you need to do to get AGI going or to get the next level of AI going, you've got a full fuel tank. Now you got to go drive.
The wizard needs data badly.
Yes.
All right. Let's take a quick break. And then when we get back, we're kind of running along. So when we get back, we're going to roll through some of the new stuff. Some of the news. Be right back. Well, the big news this week for Android users is that finally we have our very own Find My Device network. Now, there's a caveat, because as they do say, buyer beware, caveat emptor in Latin. It turns out that this is only going to be working with a number of trackers. This is not a end-all, be-all solution. This is not going to integrate any of the Samsung tracking devices that exist out there, the Galaxy Tag. But at the very least, it'll be something that Android users can make use of, and it'll be something the trackers that are being made that works with this network will also work with Apple's Find My network, from what I'm reading. Some of them will. Not all of them, but some of them will.
This was a kind of a joint project. They developed a specification or a proposal for an industry standard for how tracking tags should work. When Apple and everybody else is getting hit by hardware. Oh wow, you mean that if I just buy this $20 tag, I can like hide in the bumper of like a car I want to steal and then figure out where it's going to be parked? Great. That was probably bad for advertising, and so we need to find a way so that
it was very bad.
Yeah, it was especially the way that Apple was when this started to become a bubbling over sort of PR disaster. So
it got worse. It got really bad.
Yeah, exactly.
Women were posting on TikTok about like the people who had like found them because of it. Oh my gosh!
Absolutely, and Apple was being a little bit cavalier about it because they put in protection so that if you as an iPhone user entered your car and your iPhone detected that, hey, there's an AirTag here that doesn't belong to you, like you might want to check to see if there's like an AirTag, someone has put, you know, hidden AirTag inside your device, inside your car. Like, well, what if you have the most popular mobile operating system on the planet? Well, we've released an app, and if you're suspicious, you can launch that app and do a scan. Like, yeah, that's not quite as good as the phone automatically detecting a tracker that doesn't belong to me, is it? So this was part of like that collaboration. Let's figure out a way to get these things working together. So
it looks like, so this is going to work a lot like Apple's network. So it's going to include the trackers as well as phones, which is already something that you've been able to do with the Android network. Earbuds. Some earbuds include third parties like Sony and JBL. JBL, by the way, is owned by Samsung, so that makes sense. Apparently, the 1 billion worldwide network of Android devices is going to help you find all of these things. But I'm going to tell you, if you're at home, your stuff is probably somewhere at home. And the Find My Device app is not going to help you find it at home. Unless you have the Nest devices around that can help you pinpoint it. So that's going to be one cool thing about the Find My Device network, is that you'll be able to say, hey, it's nearest to this Nest device.
So Google's advice to you is to buy multiple Nest devices for every room in the house, particularly if there's like a closet that you enter in a lot. So not just one for the bedroom, but one for the bedroom and the bedroom closet. Maybe one for under the bed as well, because if it's under the bed, you might not hear it peeping.
I mean, that is the good news of all this, is it taps into the existing like Thread network, right, that exists in your household if you are fully in on this ecosystem. So that's kind of nice. Also, the trackability of an item, it isn't just limited to one owner. So if you've got like a set of house keys that you let people borrow, let's say, when they're visiting your house, then you can put a tracker on that and two people can make sure that those keys stay at the house, that sort of thing. Now, the rollout of Find My Device is going to change some things in Android 15. It was kind of, people were kvetching a little bit about it, which I can understand why. So what's going to happen with Android 15 is that Bluetooth will get re-enabled if you turn it off. So basically the next day when you wake up and take your phone off the charger, Bluetooth will be on again if you happen to have turned it off the day before. The idea is that this ensures you'll be able to locate your phone in case you did forget to turn the Bluetooth on. Like, this makes sure your phone is always trackable because the Bluetooth is pinging. I am curious what this is going to be like for battery life. They did a whole Google security blog about how they secured this network, how it's end-to-end encrypted, how it's private, how it doesn't see your Android device handle and all that. But you know, it's a still network at the end of the day.
Yeah, okay? And sometimes I turn off Bluetooth not just to like save on battery or whatever. Actually, this Bluetooth LE just uses so little energy to begin with. But sometimes I'm a little bit paranoid, and I'm like, I'm going through a mall, and if I'm really in like my civil awareness mode, I bet there every single kiosk and every single counter in this store like has a tracker so it can see not only who I am, but also what path I'm taking, and did I stand longer at this perfume counter than I did at this sock counter, and what can it conclude about my desire to buy snow tires in December about it? Well, screw you, Mr. Man. I turned off my Bluetooth. I should really buy like a Faraday bag for that, because
a cool stylish Faraday bag,
a cool stylish Etsy. something that made that might make people think that I left a comedy show in a hurry.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Android 15, so the first public beta is out now. Again, with the caveat mTOR, except you're not buying anything here. But don't download this to your primary device that you are using every single day, please, especially if you're using that device for work and personal life matters. For instance, I am not going to be installing this on my Pixel 8. Is that what I'm using? Yes. I forgot what phone I have. I'm not going to be installing this on the Pixel 8. I actually don't know what phone I'm going to install it on, to be honest with you. Yeah. I'll have to look through the archive. But there's a bunch of exciting stuff. We will get into Android 15, I think, in the next couple of weeks. We're going to hear a lot more about it by the time Google I/O comes out, because that's when the third beta goes out as Google I/O. And that's the one that is very feature packed. So that's the one that's going to be flashy.
Yeah. We've been getting a bunch of dribs and drabs of new features, particularly as the developer betas have been out, and of course 9to5,
thanks,
Google,
Michelle
and
others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. They'll tear it apart. Yeah, but it's nice at Google I/O because it's the first opportunity for Google to tell the story of what they're looking to get accomplished with Android 15. Sometimes,
AI.
Yeah, exactly. It's my God, you cannot play the AI drinking game. On like the Apple keynote for Apple and Google developer keynotes, like this year, you will be schnockered by the first 15 minutes.
I could, though, because wouldn't that be hilarious if I was sloshed? Because of how many, objectively, let's speak about it objectively as if we were still in our 20s. Wouldn't that be hilarious if I were just sloshed by the time Sundar Pichai walks off stage?
Nice butt, huh? Shake it till I can't take it, Sundar.
I would totally never be invited back. Because I totally would do something like that. I would objectify a Google engineer who was on stage, and then they would say, excuse me, this working relationship we've had with you for over 10 years, you are canceled. I would be canceled. Google would cancel me if I did that, which is why I'm not going to do it.
Not only am I going to need back those two loaner phones, but I think that we gave you some stickers at the last event. We were going to need those stickers back as well.
I'm going to ask for the stickers back.
Let's just say you made a real impression on the C-suite with them.
Well, I just said it looked like he'd been working out.
Come on, okay. Baby, that's a compliment. Not so funny when it's gender flipped, is it?
Okay, honestly, I have done that before, and I'm really sorry. But I was also probably out drinking with a girlfriend, so I apologize if anybody saw me do that. So the Pixel, it giveth and it taketh away, much like our dear Lord and Savior. So there were a couple of interesting announcements this week regarding Pixel-exclusive features. This just goes to show you how interesting this news was to me, because completely went over my head. So the good news is that some of the Pixel's AI-based photo editing tools, they're actually coming to more Google Photos users on Android, iPhone, and the web, which is really nice. I like the web part because that is just a convenient thing for me, because when I'm looking over pictures, obviously I'm on my computer at the big monitor to see what things look like, not on my, 6.1 inch screen on my phone. This stuff is going to include Magic Editor, Photo on Blur, Magic Eraser, and Portrait Light. It kind of ends the reign of the Pixel exclusivity of these features in a bit, but the whole point is you buy the Pixel, it gets you access to these features first.
Yeah, I'm really glad that it's available everywhere, because it is a good, like, sort of like ambassador for all the great things that Google puts into its features. The idea that Magic Eraser was already like one of the greatest demos I could give anybody when they said, well, why do you have an Android phone instead of iPhone? Say, well, can your iPhone do this? And hey, look, there's a dog. There's a dog that's taking a leak behind in this background, this picture. Hey, look, the dog is no longer there. And Magic Editor does even better than that. The idea of actually like, no, I want I actually like the dog, but I would like him to be on the other side of the picture. Select, slide over, and then generative AI fills in the hole left behind in the background of the dog. Like, that's the sort of stuff that makes you like glad that you bought this stuff. I just hope that it doesn't. The benefits of having this in Google Photos for iOS isn't offset by like the lack of, I don't know, speciality. If it makes my Pixel feel less special, that, well, gee, if I can get the Magic Eraser, if I can get Magic Editor, if I can get portrait lighting, photo and blur, like on my iPhone, well, that's one less reason for me to stick with an Android.
Let me tell you who's going to really be annoyed by this. Samsung. Because why do I need Galaxy AI, which, by the way, and they're going to charge for it in 2 years. So why would I need Galaxy AI when I have Google's features, which I pay for my whole family? Because, again, I have Google One. that is the big thing about this. So these features are going to be available through the Photos app starting May 15th. That's the start of Google I/O. Hooray for us. But unless you have a Pixel phone or a Google One subscription, you'll only be able to save 10 photos using the generative AI Magic Editor tool per month.
Yeah.
Again,
unlimited if you have a Pixel, unlimited if you have Google One subscription, and that doesn't affect the other features, photo and blur, Magic Eraser, like portrait light. But yeah, that gives you an idea of how much money it costs on the servers to actually do like Magic Editor and all that generative AI. So I can understand that. And also, didn't that seem kind of interesting? I know that I can, we all can kind of like overanalyze things in the lead up to Google I/O or WWDC for Apple, but I think it's kind of encouraging that this thing that they're, if it's going to be available starting the week of Google I/O, there must have been a draft of the keynote in which this was part of the demo, or this was going to be an example or an announcement of it. But maybe they just realized that, wow, we've got so much cool stuff to talk about. Can't we just like pre-announce this in April and then just keep the start date so our developers don't need to actually have it ready earlier than that, but we don't have to actually take up time during the keynote with this. I might be overthinking it though.
What I'm also thinking about, by the way, because you said it earlier, you mentioned the iPhone. So, like, the iPhone is going to get these features on Google Photos, but I have a feeling iOS 18 is just going to be Apple being like, screw you, Google. We can do it too. Because we already saw some of that in the iPhone 15 with some, it has like one AI ability, which is the blurring. But you know what that means. The next thing is the erasing, because the Samsung can do it and the Pixel can do it. Like, obviously the iPhone is going to have to do it natively.
Sure.
So that's next. I just think it's so funny how photo editing in this way is somehow considered like the AI future, because I had never in my life ever associated that stuff with AI, to be quite honest with you.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know why.
I like the fact that this
makes
sense,
but
it does make sense. I like the fact that this is something that an application of AI that is an actual useful feature. It's not academically useful. It's not an interesting demo. Everybody has been in that situation where, dang it, I didn't realize that there was this tree like right behind my mom, and now it looks like the tree is sticking right out of her head. Like, otherwise it's just a beautiful picture. Or you could just simply circle the tree and the tree is no longer there. Yay, I've rescued this picture. Now I'm no longer feeling shame and ridicule.
For that picture. For everything else in life. So a little bit of shame here for VPN by Google One. It is shutting down soon. So VPN by Google One is a good cheap VPN if you weren't paying for Google One. Or excuse me, you could pay just $2 for it a month if you wanted to through the Google One mobile app. But Google says that they're discontinuing it because, frankly, nobody was really using it. And honestly, I don't either. Because the thing is, it didn't let me pick what location I wanted. And I understand it existed for security reasons. So you could, like, you know, put a little barrier between you and like a public Wi-Fi hotspot.
Yeah.
But on a home computer, it doesn't really make sense because what I want at home is regional VPN for access to things outside my region. Just being honest.
Sure.
We already said the word pirate on this episode. Now, the Pixel VPN that was introduced with Pixel 7 will be unaffected by this week's announcement, as well as the VPN that Google Fi customers get. So it sounds like mobile folks are still going to be able to access this for the situations where they are on like a public Wi-Fi network and they want a little extra barrier.
I think Google even said that they've got some new features and some new improvements to like the Pixel version of it in the works. But yeah, it's too bad. Yeah. As it turned out, I actually like canceled my ExpressVPN subscription like this month because I'm just not traveling enough to make it really. It's a great service. They used to be a sponsor. That's one of the things that kind of made it more difficult because I decided that okay, I can subscribe to it so long as I'm not taking any discounts for it whatsoever, so that I'm legitimately like a regular user. And it was my favorite. It's just that it wasn't $2 a month was worth it for like what I need a VPN for right now. It wasn't worth like more than $10 a month, which is what like ExpressVPN was charging. So and I'm sure that the next time I travel, like I will like reactivate it for a month so I can use it then. But yeah, so it's ironic that like, oh well, and if I ever do need like a VPN without really expecting it, I still got like my Google One subscription. No, okay, damn it. Damn it. I forgot. Andy isn't allowed to have nice things and be happy. Things aren't supposed to work out for Andy, are they? Sorry, universe. I promise not to get above myself again.
Well, that about sums it up for the show, Andy. Now, if you are a member of the Real FM Network, we do have a little segment coming up after this where we're going to be talking about Google Podcasts. So if you are subscribing to our lovely podcast network that homes us, that houses, that is our home, is what I meant to say, you will have access to that episode in just a bit. So those of you who are curious about what we're talking about, you can go to relay.fm/material to find out more. You'll also find episode notes for all the past shows we've done over there, as well as information on how to become a member of this wonderful podcast network. Andy, I am tired. I apologize to everyone. I actually came down with something this week. I don't know if you can hear it in my throat. So that's why it's been kind of rough. So I'm going to end it here. Andy, do you have anything that you'd like to leave with us this week?
Be kind to each other. Also, if you watch the Conan O'Brien season-ending appearance on Hot Ones this week.
Oh, yeah.
He really leaned into the opportunity of being funny by like not just having a dab of the hot sauce, but actually drinking out of the bottle. And I do believe that by the end of the show, he came to regret that.
I just, it's just so silly to me. It's just so silly, the things we do for love, you know?
Hey, free wings.
By the way, we know that the podcast is running long because my lights just turned off in my office.
You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here.
Thanks, everybody, for listening this week. We love you so much. We appreciate you being here every single week. We appreciate our editor for making us sound great every week. And we look forward to chatting with you next week. And you know, hopefully Google does something interesting. So until then, I want everybody to have a happy, safe, and healthy 7 days. Goodbye, everybody.
Interesting, but not evil. Evil things are very interesting, but I don't know. No, that's not the kind of interesting we want. Have a great week.